You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2309 North Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
Good apologies are hard to find. We all screw up, and so we all need to give and receive apologies all throughout our lives. And the problem is that if apologies are done wrong, they can really, really crack relationships. So it's challenging business. I'm taking a rather practical approach to this talk tonight. I really just want to talk about how you can make a good apology. But just from the other side, it can be really excruciating to not get the apology that we want. You've felt that, I'm sure, in your life. Just to give you a story, back when I was in my mid-30s, I was in therapy, fighting a very stubborn depression. I was learning about my relationship to my family, particularly my very anxious mom. I had a pattern of caretaking that was very hard for me to see, and so it was even harder for me to break that pattern. The heart of my anguish had something to do with these deep-seated feelings of worthlessness and even invisibility. Needing to do for others perfectly without mistake meant that I also carried a radically high level of self-neglect, even self-abnegation. In the midst of all this, it came upon my 34th birthday. I think it was my 34th. And my mom took it upon herself to give me a makeup mirror. I don't know if you've been up close with me yet, but I'm 64 and I don't wear makeup. I hadn't worn makeup since I was about 14. It was the late 60s when I was a teenager and I had gone the hippie route. Long blonde hair, cut off jeans, no makeup. So what was the meaning of this mirror 20 years after I'd not worn makeup? Total non-recognition of who I am? That's what it felt like. A bold hint I needed to improve my looks? Crossed my mind that that might be what she meant. I told my therapist all about this, and she said to me, in rather untherapeutic language, she gave me a direct command, "You must give the mirror back." I said immediately, "No way in hell." I didn't pause to be polite or hesitate a moment, just no way in hell. I kept that mirror for 5 months on the dresser in our bedroom. I was ruminating. Finally, I wrote a 2-page letter starting with all the ways I appreciated my mom and ending with, "I'm giving back the mirror because it hurt me. I don't wear makeup. It seems to miss who I am." And I wonder if it was supposed to signal an evaluation of me and push me to start wearing makeup. In other words, to change into someone that my mother could like. I didn't say all that in the letter. I just said, it hurt. It seemed to miss the mark on who I am since I haven't worn makeup in 20 years. I delivered this mirror back to my parents' house when I knew my mother would not be home. I was not brave. Didn't hear anything for almost 3 weeks. I was waiting. I had decided it was important that I give the mirror back and that I make myself wait for her to respond in some way, any way. And I would absolutely accept any gesture, but I had told myself that I had to wait. So about 3 weeks later, I got a brief typed note in the mail. The gist of this very brief note was, "I'm sorry you feel that way." This is not a very good apology. In fact, this is a very bad apology. But I called her right away, reconnected. It was all she could do, and somehow I think through the work of my own therapy, I realized that was all she could do. But it was important that I had at least sent the signal to myself in giving her that. So bad apologies are tough. They are hard. And in my field, we research everything, yes, even apologizing. Studies have found statements including elements of denial, it's not my fault, that doesn't work very well, or evasion, well, you see, it was kind of complicated what was going on. Those don't wash out well when you're trying to apologize. On the other hand, apologies containing elements of corrective action, I really will never do that again. Or even sort of a self-mortification, so I'm ashamed of myself that I did that. Those are received far more favorably. Satisfaction was higher following an apology that was intense, empathetic, and timely. It's really hard to offer an apology that is intense, empathetic, and timely, that thinks about the other person's feelings in a way that didn't take too long. To no one's surprise, a 2010 study published in Psychological Science showed that women apologize more than men because women are more likely to believe they need to apologize. According to the study's authors, men apologize less frequently than women because they have a higher threshold for what constitutes offensive behavior. End quote. This may help to explain why a woman will apologize over trivial errors, but a president may dismiss boasting about sexual assault as simply locker room talk. Mm-hmm. Bad apologies, however, can go across genders, of course. A Harvard Business School study from 2014 showed that apologizing for things that aren't even your fault can actually be a way of garnering trust from others. These studies have lots of variables, but anyway, in this study, the researcher went to a busy train station and began asking strangers if he could borrow their mobile phone. It was a really wet day in November, and so on some occasions he began by saying, "I'm so sorry about the rain." When the request began with such a superfluous apology, something that he could not have any control over, but an apology nonetheless, 47% of the people handed over their phones, compared to just 9% of the people who handed over their phones when he didn't mention the rain. Being on the receiving end of a superfluous apology made many people trust a stranger enough to hand over an expensive personal item. I pondered that a little bit. I thought, well, why would that be so? I think I'd argue that this is because we all really long for a really good apology all the time. We especially want it when we've been hurt, and we've all been hurt. We feel disconnected a lot, and we want to reconnect. We want to find a reason to trust. But becoming aware of these longings for reconnection requires a high level of vulnerability from us, and that is very, very hard for us human beings. We mostly live trying to figure out how to avoid hurt, don't we? Isn't that the name of the game? So we don't want to apologize. And we don't want to be in the position of wanting an apology from someone else. This is one more element of sort of our contemporary ways that I think pushes us into isolation and loneliness without our even conscious awareness that that's happening. This attempt to live a life that is free of hurt isn't human. But can't you feel yourself wishing for it? This wish to live free of apologizing and receiving apologies is a fear-based life at its core. And Jesus invites us to something very, very different. The Bible doesn't talk about apologies. It does talk about forgiveness. Rod and I were out in California just before Christmas at a huge psychotherapy conference. I especially wanted to go to this conference because Harriet Lerner was speaking there, and she'd written a number of books that I'd found helpful and recommended to others. The Dance of Anger, The Dance of Intimacy, a number of others. And I was struck in her presentation at the way she faltered when she tried to talk about forgiveness. She was discussing apologies. She sort of inspired my giving this sermon. But when it came to forgiveness, she finally just said, "I don't understand forgiveness, so I've given up on it. I focus on letting go of anger and resentment. Forgiveness can be a religious thing, a spiritual thing," she offered. But it wasn't her thing. Well, as I sit here tonight before you, I want to say, please do not give up on forgiveness. It is hard work. It does elude us, as Lerner pointed out. It's beyond us in ways. But because of Jesus' presence in our lives, because we live in a relationship with the living God, we can forgive. Not easy. But listen again to the importance Jesus puts on forgiving. In Matthew 6, in the Lord's Prayer, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us." Even more clearly, just a few verses later in the same chapter, "If you forgive those who sin against you, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you refuse to forgive others, your Father will not forgive your sins." Stuff. We're going to come back to this issue of forgiving in a minute, but first I want to emphasize the importance of good apologies in order to live a life that cares about relationship, about loving. In Matthew 7, Jesus recommends for a good life, that is, for a life well lived, this very famous sentence: "Do to others whatever you would like them to do to you." This is the essence of all that is taught in the Law and the Prophets. Most of us have heard this many, many times. We call it the Golden Rule. I think we've heard it so many times we don't really listen to it. It's rich in its depth of meaning. For Jesus, this is the essential element. This is it. This is the essence of life. Do this for others. Do the sorts of things you long for. Do that for others. So I'd like to apply this to the way we go about apologizing to one another. Apologize the way you wish the other person would apologize to you. Three parts to a good apology. "I'm sorry. My fault." Own what is your fault. Don't own what isn't your fault, but own what is. "What can I do to make it right?" A bit more from Jesus about this process. Matthew 18, that's a very famous scriptural passage for people that follow in the Anabaptist tradition, if you like theological labels. But he's talking about what do you do when stuff goes wrong in relationships within the context of the family of faith. And he says, quote, "If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back." End quote. I would contend that most of us would rather avoid Matthew 18. It brings up a lot of resistance in us. We don't want to admit that we're hurt, so we resist. It's scary. And it's that fear that we have to consistently and constantly address in our hearts if we are serious about following Jesus. Jesus doesn't let up on this. Fear must be faced. Here again, he makes this very practical demonstration. Be vulnerable enough to go privately to someone who's hurt you and tell them about it. Can't you feel the resistance to this stir up in you? They hurt me. Won't they just do more of it? Jesus says, go anyway. He's not sympathetic about our fear. Go do this. But notice the outcome he's working on. You have won that person back. This business of apologizing and even giving your friend who believes the opportunity to apologize to you is important because of the disconnections and hurts that happen all the time. They must be attended to and they must be mended, and you should expect them. They're going to happen. We need to win each other back over and over. And wouldn't this be lovely if we could accept this about ourselves and about one another? We goof up and need to go to one another and say, I've been hurt, and we need to stay open to this process of coming back together. It's normal. Apologies are the basic stuff of relationships. Let's learn to do them well. It's a little three-step dance. Let's do them as a demonstration of our love for God. This little three-step formula for apologizing, I hope, is helpful, but I would contend that you and I need to pray a good bit before we can say something like this to someone we've hurt, or to someone who feels hurt, even if we didn't mean to hurt them. However, let me add rather quickly here, don't say you're sorry if you don't think you have anything to apologize for. And also, I hope you're able to admit or pause long enough to consider that if you don't think you have anything to apologize for, that does not mean that you don't have anything to apologize for. It just means that you're going to have to think through what has happened. Try to find your way to an authentic place of understanding what's happened in you and what may have happened in another. Real or sincere and authentic apologies are the only ones that can be good. If you don't think you've done anything wrong, but you know that the other party does, spend some time considering why they might feel that way. Try to put yourself in their shoes to garner up some empathy for their experience. See them as a real, whole individual with needs and rights of their own, and see if dwelling on that a little bit helps you change your mind about making an apology. It's hard work. The other thing to consider in this apologizing business is, what's your intention for the action you take? If something goes wrong, what's your intention next? You're going to scream, going to write a letter, going to send a nasty email. Are you wanting to get an apology? Do I want to make him feel as bad as he made me feel? There's lots that runs through us when we're working on all this. We'll have to unearth all these sorts of mixed motives and get some help with them before we can apologize with any sort of sincerity or authenticity. So you may have to talk to a friend. You may have to talk out loud to yourself. You may have to pray a good bit. So the goal needs to be clear inside of us. Jesus's goal is to win the person back, to mend the relationship, to reconnect. Here's another bit of apology advice. Say it short. The person will shut down if their defenses are triggered, and this is a very hard thing to avoid in ourselves and in others. We are wired for defense. But we're trying to win the other person back through an honest acknowledgement of our own feelings with an openness to theirs. If they exit the situation, that doesn't accomplish the goal of connection. If we're angry and confrontive, we become easy for the other person to dismiss. Angry confrontations don't work. They invite the other to see you as blameworthy. It takes courage to get under all of those aggressive, get back, stand back, defensive thoughts and feelings, because what's under them is always something about fear and hurt and that deep longing we have to reconnect, but we're now unsure the other person will receive us. It takes courage to get to those deeper, vulnerable feelings and to share those with dignity and calm. When you need to tell someone that he or she hurt you, start with some truth and start with some positive truth. You are important to me. I would not put myself through this if that were not true. I would not care about being hurt or hurting if you weren't important to me. So start there. The medium matters. Lerner suggested that you should never do an apology or even an attempt to express a hurt yourself over email. I'm not sure she wasn't expressing a bit of her age when she suggested that. But email is notoriously a medium that isn't good for emotional expression. So you might consider a handwritten note. You might consider how you can calm yourself and speak, maybe a cup of tea. Focus on the other person's feelings. Avoid asking for anything. Actually, it's good to not even ask for the apology, just to state your hurt. Try to concisely articulate that. Because again, we're trying to help not trigger the other person's hardwiring for defense, right? Try to be clear and try to invite connection rather than cutoff. And finally, I said this at the beginning, I'll say it again, keep it short. The higher the word count, the more the person you're talking to will shut down. Watch out for this huge pitfall when apologizing. We often, maybe without knowing it, or maybe just because we're going off a little too quickly, we use an apology as an excuse to actually avoid listening to what the other person has to say. Again, we have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable, to be open to what they have to say. You don't know how the apology will be taken or what might be triggered by it. Trying to dial down our natural defensiveness is very difficult. We're wired for defensive listening. And we're taught about that even more in our culture, particularly here in the West. We listen for what we do not agree with. We've been taught this in school, right? We listen for distortions, we listen for inaccuracies, so we can bring these up, and they will inevitably be there, particularly if you're dealing with emotional content. It's not going to be consistent. The trick here, if you want to go with the goals Jesus sets about mending, about reconnecting, about winning a relationship back, try to listen for the part you can agree with. Try to get the essence of what the person is trying to say. Listen to understand, not to gather their argument and counter with yours. This is hard. You can come back in another conversation to talk about what you might not even have agreed with the person. But these initial conversations need to be this effort to hear what's under the anger, this effort to get our brains back connected with our frontal lobes where we make more faithful, determined, conscious decisions. When our emotions get triggered, we shut down those connections. We work from the midbrain where our emotions are housed in the limbic system of your brain. That has lots of hard wiring that goes directly to the brainstem to fight or flight, to shut down and walk out of the room, or to argue, punch, scream, and fight. And neither of those gets to Jesus' goal of winning a person back. listen to the hurt party's anger and pain. Try to listen to what's under it. They need to know that we carry some of that pain with them. Validate the feeling behind the words. Listening is the primary factor in any connection. Also, be mindful of one more pitfall. There is a risk, I think particularly for women, of over-apologizing. Over-apologizing can actually create distance where we just, oh, I'm so sorry. It's really kind of irritating. Apologies can be used in lots of ways. A word about entrenched non-apologizers. They exist in our world. Here's a hard reality. The greater the harm, the less likely an apology will come. To apologize, the one apologizing must have a deep sense of self-worth. When therapists work with offenders, we're often walking a very fine line. It's almost like being on a tightrope. If the offender's identity is attacked in any way, remorse will not be accessed in them. There won't be any progress. So we have to find this way of helping the offender to see what's gone on in a new light, certainly, that involves the other person. But it's very, very difficult because of trying to not diminish the client's agency or their will. They're very fragile people underneath. And so good treatment involves enlarging self-worth while holding them fully accountable for their actions. It's a tough place. But the harmed party also walks a tightrope when they want to bring up a conversation about their hurt, when they're very acutely aware that they hope to get an acknowledgement of the harm that happened, that the hurt was real. And what happens, unfortunately, all too often is the harmed party gets re-traumatized trying to make this happen. The need arises in many offenders to avoid the experience of shame at all costs. And so that leads to denial, to acting as if these things never happened. And this overrides any ability in the offender to empathize with the harmed person. For harmed people who are trying to speak the truth about their experience, they have to concentrate on their own voice expressing the truth, knowing that the other very well may never apologize or never validate their experience. The offending person's ability to apologize is again directly related to this deep sense of self-love, and they may not have any of that at their core. And so an apology, although they may actually, in their own way, in their own fractured way, love the person they've hurt, an apology will never come. Let me add, as a psychologist also, though, that the level of damage to people is really just unmeasurable here. And it needs to be acknowledged that those who do damage are highly likely to have been damaged themselves. That's no excuse for an inability to grow in empathy for others, but it is an acknowledgement of the truth that some people cannot manage these higher level skills of being human. Let me go back to the topic of forgiveness. This is a picture of Jesus' parable of the unforgiving debtor, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Harriet Lerner noted her confusion with the subject of forgiveness. She's not a believer. She just couldn't fathom it. She turned to what she called letting go as an alternative. But as Christians, the teaching of Jesus is loud and clear. You'll have to wrestle with the whole of what you feel, with all of what you think, and how you behave towards those who hurt you. All of it. And mercy must be our God. So let me close with Jesus' parable. This is not an easy parable. It's also found in Matthew 18, where we get this news that we've got to go talk to these people who hurt us. This is a rendering of the servant in the story, the servant who doesn't learn to forgive and acts out mercilessly towards another. So for Matthew 18, 21 and following. Then Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? You hear, Peter, let's get a limit on that. Jesus' answer, no, not seven times, but 70 times seven. Just blows poor Peter out of the water. And then he goes on to speak this parable. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who decided to bring his accounts up to date with his servants who had borrowed money from him. In the process, one of his debtors who was brought in owed him millions of dollars. The man couldn't pay, and so the master ordered that he be sold along with his wife and children and everything that he owned to pay the debt. But the man fell down before the king and begged, please be patient with me and I will pay it all. And then the king was filled with pity for him and he released him and forgave his debt. But when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded instant payment. His fellow servant fell down before him and begged a little bit. Be patient with me. I will pay it, he pleaded. But his creditor wouldn't wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. When some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. They went to the king and told him everything that had happened. And then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, you evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? And then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his debt. That's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. This is tough stuff. It's even harsh. The goal of Jesus here is for us to learn to forgive from the heart. Parables usually have these kind of focused points. Not sure he's interested in us considering that God is a king that gets so angry he sends people off for torture. What he's more interested in is this message about having been forgiven and therefore forgiving. He knows that this is the only true freedom we humans can have. It's also how we're hardwired. We need to keep our connections. Apologies, ultimately forgiving, is about reconnecting. First, we need to keep our connection with God. So when you're hurt, or when you think you've hurt someone and you feel terribly about all that, talk to God. Talk a lot. Listen to yourself as you do this. Ask God to help you uncover why you are hurt, the depth of it. It may have more to do with your own wounds internally than with the present circumstance and the person with whom you are contending. It could even be a window for you to know yourself better, to find care from God for these deep inner wounds. From there, you may be able to decide how you want to deal with the person outside yourself who hurt you. This is heart work of the first order. To go back to my own story with my mom, my entrenched non-apologizer, it took me years of prayer, but I came to finally see how much she had hurt me. And when I could acknowledge that, I found new paths to respond to her and to others. I found mercy welling up in me then. And at the end of her life, I could confidently say I had loved her well. And the last time I saw her before she died, she even told me that she loved me. She said it right out loud. That was very new. It was wonderful. But we had pretty much also missed a whole lifetime of being connected intimately. Let God teach you to forgive. Let God teach you to forgive. Don't demand it of yourself. And certainly don't expect that it will be quick. It is long, slow, deep work. My hope is that our thinking together tonight about some practical steps in making apologies might help us along this path. Our God is rich in mercy. This is the reason we can hope to forgive and trust that our apologies can engender lasting connections between us.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.